we had to wrestle with our common sense here to keep from buying a little cottage or a lot or something. But it helped to remember that our home in Oceanside had sunrises like this and a view like no other place. Of course, it had a hedge to cut like this and a lot of yard to mow too. In September of 1964, I agreed to become interim pastor of the Carlsbad Union Church. They were on the spot because they were looking for a minister and needed somebody to fill in. I guess it was kind of funny for my children to be preacher's children after being chaplain's kids for so long. But there was a lot going on, like Sunday school and two church services in the morning and Christian Endeavor and church at night, and activities all week long. Mariner and Merrymate picnics, and a Merrymate camp out at Woodchuck Park. There was a Christian Endeavor trip to Big Bear, and Vacation Bible School, visits of our church missionaries. There were Sunday school picnics. This is Jimmy Ray posing in Live Oak Park. This is in the summer of 1965, while the rest of us keep cool in the shade. The Army Navy cadets invited us to their Christmas formal. Of course, there were duties like swimming in Hal and Nell Moody's pool. Hal used to run the boat repair yard in Oceanside Harbor. And it would appear that he ran it almost single-handed. Here he is operating the lift. We visited people like Ted and Hazel Roberts, who have a real nice backyard. We did have time to pay Ann Miller a visit. Her father was there. That's not Santa Claus. And we were able to keep in touch with Combat Town on David's birthday. In March of 1965, we bought our cottage in the mountains. It looks out over Lake Cuyamaca like this. Lake Cuyamaca is a typical California lake. Sometimes it's there and sometimes it isn't. In this shot, the water is there all right, with lots of snow too. And in the summer, we can visit with the birds and they visit with us. In the winter, we can make snow cones. This is the way we get there. This is from the main road from the lake up to the cottage. And this is how it looks after we get there. And the road past our front yard looked like this until the road people come and spoil it all by clearing it off. In May of 1965, Kurt and Lee and David dress up to go to KPFK's pleasure fair. They size up the place and leave Ma and Pa behind when we discover that it costs $2.50 to pass through that gate. So Kurt took a few pictures of the high-priced activities inside for the stay-at-homes. A recorder quartet uses the peasants next to a pottery stall. And Jerry Houck on the left decides that he can't afford the stained leaded glass. Al David dances the light fantastic with a comely lass. It's seems a lot of folks had $2.50 or else knew somebody who sneaked them in.
I'll continue the family story. In addition to our new sanctuary and all the old buildings, we also had a very modern children's educational building, and we ran a nursery school for 50 children in 4 grades every day. You can see that we were well equipped and had plenty of room and a good staff of qualified teachers. And we were already beginning to plan how we could enlarge our pipe organ. We will add rows of pipes on either side of the cross, thanks to a generous gift. Perhaps this would be a good time to take that aerial picture of the church I have been promising. Colonel Phil Upshulte, who commanded the helicopter squadron at Camp Pendleton, attended our church, so he was easily persuaded. And as you can see, Carlsbad is lovely from the air. The church is right in the center of the picture. That's the Pine Street School across the street. The church is a little to the left in this picture. That's the shopping center and San Diego Freeway in the foreground. You can see why it's necessary to photograph the church from a heavenly perspective. No way you can miss all the earthly entanglements from the ground. This view from the south shows the entrance to the old sanctuary. It's the white building with the Spanish mission-style front across the street from the school in the foreground. You can see the old sanctuary here, too. The building's in the middle with the red roof. The building in the middle with the red roof is the nursery. The playground is between it and the old sanctuary. Another of our parking lots is to the left. And that's the lagoon and Oceanside to the north.
In the summer of 66, Bill and Betty Reams came to see us, and we went to Bally High for lunch. We sat overlooking the harbor and many of MJ's old ships. Bill Reams, now a prominent Mobile lawyer, was on the staff at NTS Hollywood way back in 1945. And we went to Tijuana, naturally, and we wandered around. And Bill found a souvenir for someone, while I said, "Don't back up any further or you'll be on the horns of a dilemma." We never did get to see enough of SeaWorld in San Diego. There were diving penguins, perpendicular porpoises, and one that towed an outrigger around the lagoon. It was just before Christmas of 65 that we got Tiger, our first poodle. He was such a cute little fellow and smart. Here he teaches David to walk properly. And here he is showing David Hargis, my brother, Inspiration Point, overlooking the Borrego Desert on the way up to our cabin. The winter before, the Vosbergs had gone up with us to Cuyamaca, and Dick and MJ had cut wood for the fireplace, yeah. And we had a good time in the snow. Mark rode up that spring on his motorcycle.
Well, David, well, he didn't exactly ride as far as the cabin, but he did learn to ride. The choir had a rehearsal and supper at Dr. Colling's house, while Tiger and David explored the harbor. We kept our little sailing dinghy on this rack and really enjoyed sailing in the harbor. In June of 1966, we borrowed the Steens camper and went to pick up Bill at George Fox College in Oregon. This is our first lunch stop near Bakersfield. This is another stop near Shasta Lake. And David takes a picture with his mighty camera. I got it for buying 10 gallons of gas. This was a beautiful park where we spent a night near Corvallis. Then after we got Bill, we went to Portland and started down the coast, stopping at a succession of beautiful parks. Each spot seemed nicer than the last, and our welcome mat set it for us. We felt that way. Occasionally, we put up our tent, although we didn't really need it. And we amused ourselves with good music and literature, while Virginia performed her household chores with a backdrop of rhododendrons. We went through rainforests, a quaint old Coast Guard light station, an older fort where Virginia keeps a lookout while Bill and Mark plan a counterattack. We found lots of white beaches with double exposure to the sun and lakes to swim in, if you could swim with all those goosebumps. Mother decided she couldn't and knitted instead. Of course, we had to stop at Patrick Point. We have that paper bag to catch some of those little tiny people in that you can see on the beach below. But David prefers to collect rocks and driftwood. We explore the trails again and enjoy the flowers and wildlife. Then we pass through the redwoods, under to the Monterey Peninsula with its sweeping panoramas. Panoramas that stretch on and on, each more breathtaking than the last. We stop often to try to drink it all in, but we find it almost more than we can digest. But Virginia puts out the welcome mat and has another cup. You can see how the road had to be manufactured from thin air along here. But it makes a scenic trip that one will never forget. While we had a few problems with fog, we couldn't even imagine L.A. smog along here. We stopped to explore beaches, some with black sand, and to look out across great windswept spaces, and to sleep in a sea of windswept salt spray while we dreamed of the beauty of the sunset. Morro Bay is not as peaceful, but it is rather picturesque, and the seafood is delicious. Later that summer, David flew all alone to camp at Eagle Lake, Colorado, and Virginia and I followed in the Chevelle. We were on our way to Colorado Springs, one of the most beautiful cities in America, in my estimation. It's famous for many things, Pike's Peak and the Garden of the Gods, and we always enjoy exploring them. The color of the sandstone is brilliant red, and there are fanciful shapes in the Garden of the Gods that remind one of all sorts of things. Right behind the garden is Glen Eyrie, set back in a wooded valley with the approach through the gatehouse you can see. It's the red-roofed building. Glen Eyrie is the headquarters of the Navigators, and we always enjoy driving through the gate and wending our way back into another world. It is a world of peace and quiet where Bible study and prayer groups meet out under the trees. And the castle is the center of activities. The Lord just gave this wonderful estate with thousands of acres and scores of buildings to the Navigators when they decided to continue in civilian life the work they had begun in the Navy. General Palmer, who laid out Colorado Springs, built Glen Eyrie, sparing no expense. This is the schoolhouse where his daughter was taught in a miniature school. From the quaint little one-room log schoolhouse, you can raise your eyes to the castle. David attended the Navigators' camp about 6,000 feet higher up in the mountains, but dropped down for a meal with us. We were about a mile high. The meals were delightful, and sometimes we ate outside under the trees. You get a good backward view of the Garden of the Gods from Glen Eyrie. General Palmer really picked himself a home site. These buildings were originally the stables. One morning we got up before sunrise and climbed a mountain above the castle. I took a shortcut and was able to explore a little before we had breakfast up there. I climbed the ledge to the left and stuck my head through a crevice to get this breathtaking view of the countryside below this cliff. It was a straight drop down, but I didn't. The formation it was on top of was similar to these in the distance, only it was on top of the mountain. Those buildings are also part of Glen Eyrie. There were great sandstone pinnacles everywhere. After breakfast, we had a worship service overlooking the glen with Pike's Peak looking in on us. The pool, the pink house, the stables, and the castle itself are set in such a lovely background of lawn and trees. It looks like a Victor Herbert operetta. That year, we didn't stay in the castle, but in one of the new cottages. It was farther up the canyon, surrounded by peaks like this. And Virginia takes a look at it all and decides she'd just like to stay. We had a lovely room with private bath, and the cottage had this large lounge. We enjoyed watching the world wake up each morning and never tire of the view from this window. One day we made the trip up to Eagle Lake Camp. The Lord gave the navigators this choice acreage with lake for a water reservoir for Lake Erie, Glen Erie, and the same deal by which they acquired the glen. It's a 25-mile drive, although the camp is only about 8 miles straight up above Glen Erie. You climb and climb above the clouds and feel like you're on the top of the world. In fact, you are on top of the world. Re-entering the woods, one comes to this sign, Eagle Lake Boys Camp. And if you know the combination to the lock on the gate, you can come eventually upon this beautiful sylvan scene. The flag is reassuring, but those are real giant Indian teepees. So I reconnoiter and discover at least one friendly native. So they call the rest of the gang and descend on the camp for a picnic supper, complete with watermelon and grilled hamburgers. These pale faces sure know how to eat. While the Indians keep a watchful eye on the white men as we hold our powwow. Then we all gather at the recreation hall for, would you believe, a war dance? Eventually, all the visitors leave and things settle back down to normal again for the Indians. When David came down to the glen, we decided to run out to the Air Force Academy. It's quite an unusual spectacle. And the chapel is most unusual. I'm trying to be kind. The interior is almost as bad as the exterior, all angles and gleam and glare. If the purpose is to aid in worshiping Almighty God, he's a streamlined, chromium, Air Force kind of God, but then I guess God does have a sense of humor. Going home, we spent a day in Durango and rode the old train to Silverton. We rode in the cattle car and it was the best car because it was the last one. And as we wound around curves, you could get a picture of the whole train. Some of the curves were pretty steep and sharp. We clickety-clacked across bridges over raging mountain streams and ran beside a river in a high valley. We made a stop to let off some people at a dude ranch. The only way to get there is by this train. We reached Silverton in time for lunch and rode back on a bus. The return trip was just as pretty and a lot cleaner. We were black with coal smoke after the train ride. And having crossed the Continental Divide before Durango,
and having looked carefully around to be sure there was no dangerous wildlife, we decided to head for Mesa Verde. Panoramas like this make your soul stretch. The only thing we couldn't understand was why the early Western immigrants had gone on to California and hadn't stayed right here. These early settlers had long since left for someplace. But the remains of their homes attract many awe-stricken visitors like us. And we found a cool, shady spot and had lunch. When we got home, we found Poco waiting patiently for us. In fact, you can see how long he had been waiting and watching by the nose marks on the window. Poco
was such a nice dog. And occasionally he would smell old flowers on a lovely spring day, get a faraway look in his eyes. We knew what was wrong. So we acquired Buku, a wife for Buku. With, sooner or later, the expected result. Yep, six of them. The only way Buku could even get to smell his offspring was for us to hold the cautious mother. So Buku would pretend that he wasn't really interested. I couldn't decide which was prettier. The puppies were the famous bicycle. Actually, David's trying to fool people. In this picture, he didn't usually dress up his way to ride, especially when he went on the 25-mile ride. Bill, who had gone into the Army and was a corpsman, came home on leave in January of 1968. In fact, he came home every chance he got, first from Denver, Colorado, and even from Korea. One time, when he was home, he brought this Alfa Romeo, but he didn't get to use it much. It's too bad, too, in a way, because it did give him a certain charm for the fairer sex. And its trunk would hold a lot of pizza. Here he is at Felipe's Grotto in San Diego. In the summer of 1968, we took a trip. We wanted to see if we still loved the lakes and groves of Central Florida, and if we could trade the hills of Southern California for the hills of Florida. We left Oceanside early in the morning and stopped in the Saguaro Cactus near Tucson for a picnic breakfast. Then we went through Texas, and that's a lot of through, and stopped to see Lyndon Johnson's ranch. That's his river in the background. We don't think he used that outhouse, because this is what his ranch house looks like. Sure is pretty for Texas. David checked his mailbox to see if the president had been writing to his congressman lately. We posed for a picture of Lake Charles, Louisiana, too. And then we stopped at Pascagoula, Mississippi, where Mr. Moody, Hal Moody, was working. For the shipyard there. Just inside his shipyard, they have this old Civil War monitor which they salvaged from the Mississippi River. And in Mobile, Alabama, we went with Bill Reams to see another famous fighting ship, the USS Alabama. Bill was a member of the committee, the State Committee of Alabama, that got the Alabama from Mobile. It's a thrill to go aboard. And kind of sad for a Navy man anyway to see a beautiful ship like that, which will never sail again. Near Panama City, Florida, we stopped for breakfast in a state park. Poco and David took a walk. It's a state park on an inlet from the Gulf of Mexico and very beautiful. Those are campsites down along the water. Fishing is good, they tell us. It seems like we're always eating, because here we are beside the Suwannee River, yep, eating. And I stood for about 5 minutes hoping that a boat would pass by to make a better picture, and then I decided to go ahead and shoot it. Within 3 seconds, a boat came around that bend. In Mount Dora, we called on Jeff Ray and his family. He's Betty's oldest son, who's a lawyer. We stayed with Betty on Lake Gertrude. Some of her grandchildren were visiting her because their mother, Betty Ann, was having a baby. David went fishing in Lake Gertrude and started small. Betty then took us to the Episcopal Church, where they outdo the Baptists. They have a whole swimming pool. We visited Betty's knit shop in Mount Dora. David and Poco went for a boat ride. Poco decided to cast his vote for living in Florida. So we went out to Lake Joanna. That's where Virginia and I first met. and he found this lot for sale by the Fosters, who were friends of Aunt Betty's, to the same church.
Up the lot and decided it was a good place to live. And of course, one look at Lake Joanna would sell anyone. Good clean water, good swimming, and lots of fish. What a wonderful place to live. But we ran our way to see Uncle Howard on Kokolobo Island, so we went to Homestead. And when the Air Force refused to fly us out to Islandia, we called on this character. Yep, that's my brother Howard. He's a swell guy. He took us out in his Boston Whaler. It's a neat boat with a police insignia on the side because he's the sheriff of that territory. To Kokolobo, which is about 8 miles out to sea from the mainland. This is the old hotel where we stayed. A recent hurricane had pretty well banged the place up. In fact, the cottage here where Howard used to live had to be abandoned. You can see what happened to the old casino building to the right. But the dock was still standing, and it was fun living in the big old spooky hotel. If buildings could talk, this one would be worth hearing from. History has been made here. In fact, we suspect that the Teapot Dome plot was formed here by President Harding and Albert Fall and the others. The posts of the front porch are coquina rock, or coral. What a beautiful place this is, and we had it all to ourselves for a week. We took many interesting diving and fishing trips around the little keys and out on the reefs. And Howard's next-door neighbor, Lance Jones, who lives in this house, offered to take us bone fishing. So we set out early one morning with Lance promising David and myself both a bonefish. David hooked the first one, and he realized he really had something on his hands when the reel started smoking as he ran out the line. But he held on, and with Lance giving him expert advice, and with I did the cheering, why, he was able to land this beauty. Lance weighed it, declared it wasn't a world's record, and put it back in the ocean. We saw rays and huge calico snappers and sharks, and some of them acted like they wanted to jump into our boat. And we both caught our bonefish. We each caught two, in fact. It is great sport, but we enjoyed skin diving out there more than anything. Then after Florida, we went to Cleveland, Tennessee to visit Virginia's sister, June. She and her husband had just finished this Oriental-style house. June and Frank and Phyllis decided Poco was the world's smartest dog, too, which we certainly could have told them, even though they had a little doxy of their own, which Greg tried to trade, but Poco didn't want to stay, even though they do have a beautiful home with a nice yard to play in and green fields all around to chase rabbits in. Poco inspected the grounds thoroughly, but decided he'd go on with us. The one thing I didn't tell Poco was that Frank has his own plane. He might have traded families if he'd known that. You imagine? Being the Red Baron and flying over your own house? That's June's place in the center of the picture, behind those trees at the curve. As we flew, the sun set, and it was so beautiful. We went through Nashville on the way home and saw Frankie Hargis, Virginia's nephew, and I almost got a picture of the Parthenon there. Near Albuquerque, New Mexico, we ran through the storm on the desert. And in Arizona, we surfed through Indian country. We revisited Hubble's trading post, too. This is one of our favorite places. Poco, knowing that's a Navajo Hogan back there, stays close to Virginia. You never know about Indians. And David points out the little octagon-shaped stone house that Mr. Hubble built. It's a white man's version of a Hogan. Poco liked it better when we got back to California and went up to Santa Rosa to visit David Hargis. He prefers redheads to redskins. We went to Sausalito and had lunch with the hippies and passed by the waterfront park in San Francisco where Lee was performing with the San Francisco meme troupe. Finally, we went to see Kurt in his little cottage in San Diego. Arriving home, the sunset tried to show us what we'd be missing if we moved. That's Santa Catalina in the distance. And San Clemente Island, due west from our house. But there weren't many days that clear. Even though Oceanside Carlsbad has many lovely spots like the lagoon seen here from one of our church members' homes. And of course, the gorgeous May Company shopping mall that's just been completed between Carlsbad, Oceanside, and Vista. And we had a view of snow-capped mountains from our home in one direction. But as we explained to our California friends in Poco about the lovely freshwater lakes in Florida and the waterways connecting them like the Dora Canal, Poco's eyes lit up with interest, although Kurt and David and Bill were skeptical. So we put a for sale sign on our Oceanside home. It took us a while, but we finally sold our home in Oceanside. And keeping a stiff upper lip, I resigned as pastor of Union Church and retired again. We braced ourselves for the task and prepared to say goodbye. Some of those dear people had come to mean very much to us. Mildred, of course, my senior secretary, was the one who made my ministry possible. And Nori took care of both of us in her unassuming, quiet way. Cal Calhoun, bless his big heart, was a prayer partner. And Goldie, well, Goldie kept the bench behind the pulpit waxed, kept cough drops and ice water in the pulpit, and kept me well tied each birthday and Christmas. Fred Caldwell approaches Virginia before a service. And the Newton twins give us an identical farewell after church. It wasn't easy leaving all our friends and the lovely church, but by practicing being retired, why, I finally got used to the idea. Now, the Lord didn't want us to build a house on Lake Joanna. He had one all ready for us, with a lawn and trees and everything, including a guest house for the many friends and relatives who were anxiously awaiting a chance to share our happiness. There were large oak trees in the front yard, and cool, shady places to sit, and pine trees for swinging a hammock on the other side, and about an acre of lawn for Poco to run in. This is East Lake Joanna Drive. David is arriving on our new riding lawnmower. And we learned that we had a front seat for the world's greatest sunsets and could even get out in the middle of them. The fish and I got acquainted early. The fish is the one that is not wearing the loud Hawaiian shorts. One of the first excursions was to Cape Canaveral, Kennedy Space Center, to watch the moonshot. And with our bus and tent, we were prepared for anything. This is where we spent the night, where we could see the rocket on the launch pad. By daylight, the time of the launch, we had lots of company all around us. This is the moment of ignition. You can see the rocket just above the umbrella in the foreground. It's lifting off and rising and leaving a huge vapor trail that gets larger as the second stage ignites. And that's all, folks. Among our first purchases was this runabout, a Cobia with a Johnson 65 outboard motor. Dave enjoyed driving it up the Silver River to Silver Springs. Who says Florida doesn't have fall color? This is the Dora Canal at Tavares. And Virginia drives the boat down the St. John's River and passes through Lake Beresford near DeLand. Dave and Bob Swiger and I take the boat to Jupiter Inlet on a scout trip. And we camp on Elliott Key. Tom and Edith come to see us with Dave and Odine Hargis. The Moody's come to see us, and we explore Lake Eustis, Lake Harris, Lake Dora, and the Dora Canal. Bill and Mark come when Bill gets out of the Army, and they too approve of our waterways, the Dora Canal especially. Poco and Buku like Lake Joanna best of all, and they learn to dive, and dive, and dive, and walk on, oh, come now, not that. Harry Foster, the man who sold us our home, Daydreams, and imagine that he's as good a fisherman as I am. David is a junior in high school and decides to go in hiding under long hair.